second in a series of five talks on the distortions of mind. Don't check the indices of the Buddhist literature for this subject material. It doesn't come from the suttas. It comes from 20 years of teaching where these are often the most frequently dialogued patterns of mind that people bring. And I would say very closely at the top of that list, right after sore knees and bad, is the judging mind. Because it's amazing when you go on retreat or just spend a little time quiet, how quickly one is faced with the quality of judgment in their lives. And to the point where it's not only absurd in the dimensions that it travels and the way and the blanket that it throws upon virtually every aspect, but the pain, the burden, I think it's well summed up in this little pamphlet here. It's Verses of the Faith Mind by the Third Zen Patriarch. He says, obey the nature of things, their own nature, and you will walk freely and undisturbed. When thought is in bondage, the truth is hidden, for everything is murky and unclear. And the burdensome practice of judging brings annoyance and wearisomeness. What benefits can be deprived from distinctions and separations? I don't know, I think that resonates with people who have seen their minds up close. And the degree, the insidious degree in which judgment plays a role in virtually all aspects of our relationships, self-relationships included. So we're going to explore this judging mind tonight and really try to take it apart on many different levels. So often I was told, you know, just be aware of the mind that judges, but that didn't do much to arrest its movement, nor for me to really understand it. Tonight we're going to try to drop deeper, and what you're going to find, I think, is that there are many levels on which judgment is based. It's not just a single level, but it's a level upon a level upon a level upon a level. And we're going to try to take this apart so that we can come down to some sense of stillness, distill it down to what is it that's actually happening. It's quite complex, actually, when I started looking at it in myself, which is I make myself the subject on these talks. And you start looking at the degree of pain from which judgment is driven, and then what the pain is supposed to do for you and how it has its proper placement in keeping one enclosed within a certain frame of reference, and how below that is the fear of stillness in which the emotion is based. So anyway, we're going to go into that. But let's say that when we look at the world of judgment, when we look at ourselves, there's something wrong there. Why is it that is our frame of reference? Why is it that we keep involving life in such a clear act of separation and distinction and distance, as this verse said? Why is it that has such a compelling force within ourselves? Because when we look at there's levels upon levels of pain in this. There's not only the pain of the act of judging, as said in this verse, the burdensome weariness of judging. Just the judging itself is painful. There's the pain that drives the judgment, the emotional pain that drives the judgment, which we'll touch. And if that weren't enough, there's also the inward tension between ourselves and the other people that are being judged. And so there's an external tension felt internally when we do judge someone. And yet, the compulsive need to judge It's not as if we could just stop it if we wanted to. So we have to get a feeling for what Christ said when he said, judge not, lest thee be judged. Judge not, lest thee be judged. In other words, if your view of the universe is in terms of evaluation and comparison, then external judgment is automatic. But what we don't understand when we take that view up is that the internal sense of judgment is also there. The self-ridicule, the harshness of heart, the way I hold myself. It's not as if we could separate those two worlds out. What we do to the outward world is done to the inward world. And that begins to have an increased burden upon our psyche. And it's indiscriminate in its coverage. It's not as if it picks on just some people. It goes everywhere. You can find something wrong with anyone, can't you? So it's important for us to understand that it's driven by an attitude about oneself. Now, sometimes I sound like a Marxist up here and a socialist and all that kind of thing, but I do believe it's important to look at the economic basis, because I think the economy drives the mind. It doesn't just drive politics. It's interesting, but when you start looking at it, you can really see this. When you have a market-based economy, and again, I'm not setting up another economy that's better than this one, it's just that I have to know what this one does to me. If I don't know what this one does to me, then I'm missing the point. When we have a market-based economy, when we have products that one is enticed to buy, there has to be a component of need that one feels in which to buy that. There has to be, I want that. A wantingness needs to be invited or induced in the consumer. And if we begin to understand how that happens through the need to sell, because it's pretty obvious, you know, if the basis for a sense of worth is what you have or do not have, then you were always driven to look outward to see what other people have in comparison to what I have. But we don't stop on just the dress code or the car, we go into the characteristics, the attitudes, the skills, the intelligence, the ethnicity, the hair color, whatever you want to go into. But we don't cut, because judging doesn't stop with, I like his shoes. It goes into, he's got a better attitude than mine, he's better skilled. And then when you add the whole component of how our education unfolds, as well as the whole outlook on life, you can see how we are raised within the attitude of judgment. And to keep the system going, that is the quality of mind that's necessary in order to keep the system going. The market economy wouldn't perpetuate itself without the judging mind. It needs that. So it fosters that. No, there's not some big brother that's doing it to us. We're doing it to ourselves, never realizing what we're doing. At the best, it's benign neglect. At the worst, it does have an insidious quality to it, because there are people who do know what they're doing to us. And that doesn't seem to stop many of us. So then I've got raised in this. So that's the cultural overlay of the psychology in which I was raised by my parents or whomever, in which I was rewarded and punished based upon certain observable behaviors that they saw. I didn't get good enough grades, this happened, or whatever. And so within that system of socialization and individuation, I internalized a sense of self-judgment. So now I've got the greater culture inducing a sense of judgment within me, and also a great sense of who I am in relationship to other people, not only induced by the culture, but also induced by the upbringing that I had. So we've got ourselves quite a fix here. And we don't realize how quickly or how insidious that system works moment after moment. I mean, really, when you look out, we look out quantifiably upon the world. We quantify the world. And in our quantification, it's, you know, what does he or she have that I need? And so there's a fosters jealousy. I mean, these are the stepchildren of judgment. Envy, jealousy. And of course, then you have the whole way that we hold that and express it to other people, which is gossiping and backbiting and all of that, which is about 90% of the way we live. That's called insanity. So what is it that, you see, that's a shadow. We have to understand the shadow of how we're being driven into the shadow of things. So we can, okay, so this is it. The judgment is the shadow of our basic economic drive. Okay, so that's okay. So then I have to hold the shadow. And judgment is a component part of that shadow. But looking inwardly, which is where the deep unhappiness from which judgment arises. Judgment doesn't arise from contentment. It arises from unhappiness. From a deep belief in our sense of inadequacy. Why would you judge something if you felt completely adequate? And because we hold this pain, we don't hold this pain. We intimate the pain, but we can't bear to have it full in our life. We skip from the pain to judgment. Judgment is an attempt. If I see if I can judge, then I have some relief to my pain of inadequacy. If I can judge you as being lower than or worse than or somehow, you know, then for a moment there's some relief in my feeling of unworthiness. Well, it's fictitious. It's like I blew up a balloon and there's a hole in it. It's deflating even as but if I keep doing it, exercise it enough, it takes the sharpness of the pain of inadequacy away. So then, okay, then I just, because the sharpness of the pain, the more I believe in it, and the less I move into it, the more I believe in it, and the more it's shaped over time, the louder and more boisterous those judgments have to be, because the pain gets sharper, my judgments have to get sharper. So now it's turned from judgment to sort of bragging or sort of an outward display, some way to show everybody that I'm not who my worst thoughts are about myself. Some way to take the relief a step further. Please, anyone believe this? Believe my actions. Don't believe my inward thoughts. And there was a 19 in the 60s. There was a singing group that said, and there was a phrase that caught me even back then. If only you knew what was inside of me now, you wouldn't want to know me somehow. Don't we all sort of feel that? And then the array of activity that we create to cause interference in that basic belief system, so that nobody will really see into us, so we'll create a lot of acting out or other forms of intra-psychic work to sort of keep people, you know, a sense of humor can come from that, actually. Or nice, I'll be nice. See, all of this is, but you're never nice enough. See, the balloon's deflating even as we try to blow it up. There's a damn hole in it. You feel this now? Because you have to feel it. I want to take it down so that you just feel it in your socks. You feel it in your socks, then you're going to do something about it. If you just do this as an intellectual exercise, You'll blow it off, and we'll move on to the complaining mind the week after next. So judgment allows some relief. And at a certain stage or a certain point, because I've lived with this particular sense of who I was along the way, I begin to believe more and more strongly in it as I made this. And you can see it. You can see it happen. We have a cat at our house. Now, let's not quibble about this, but I feel like a cat doesn't really project a lot of insane thoughts. You might think differently, but I just don't believe it. I don't believe it has holding secret opinions of me. But the damn thing, I'll do something, and I'll see it looking at me, and I'll think, oh, she really understands how unworthy I am here in this life. just by the way, she's kind of like flicking her head or something. Which is really, isn't it interesting, because we're set to create the worst case scenario. From a neutral cat, we'll mirror that judgment, that inward judgment onto virtually everything. And we do it to each other. Believe me, we do it to each other. Whoa. So much misunderstanding occurs through that mirroring effect that we hold each other up to. And we don't check it out sufficiently because we're afraid that if we do check it out, he'll tell me what a rotten person I am, confirming my worst case scenario. And so I just soon stay away from that subject. So I won't check it out. Or we'll get, you know, in some retreats I go to, I get evaluation forms. Like they do an evaluation. He was as good as, he's a good teacher, he's not so good, you know, all that kind of stuff. So I have, you know, I have maybe 100 people at a retreat. And I'm looking at the evaluation form. Good, good, you know. So then I come to one that says, this guy's a creep. Now, I had 99 weighted on one side and one that was critical. Which one do you think I carry with me? You see? Which one do you think that, oh, he saw me. This one really saw me. The rest of them I fooled. So I... Isn't that interesting? Do you see the pain in that? You see the pain we carry? The readiness to hurt? So this is it then. Okay. Now I see the judgment. I can't keep self-inflating myself. I can't keep inflating myself artificially through just judgment. It doesn't satisfy. Gives me momentary relief. It takes the topic away from me so I can get with somebody and we can gossip together about someone. And in so doing, I hook up with the communal energy, the spirit of the communal energy of judgment, which feeds upon itself, loves that. But in the end, I'm left feeling perhaps more inadequate than I was. Did nothing to dispel that sense of who I am. Now, so I'm going to put that line of reasoning and investigation on hold for a second. We're going to go to a different line of investigation. We're going to go to wise view. Because as I've mentioned again and again in classes, unless we frame virtually everything we do in Buddhism within wise view, we are essentially off the mark. In fact, it's just a self-feeding frenzy. Self-feeding frenzy. And less wise view. Okay, what is wise view? Well, it's wise view is a sense of interconnectedness. Is that this isn't about boistering, fulfilling my sense of self. It's about just the opposite. It's about relinquishing my stance of defensiveness and connecting and interrelating and through connectedness, through the heart. So if I have that intention, which I hope all of us do, if we have that intention, it means that there are certain cues in life which will are like taps on the shoulder that's saying we are going in the opposite direction of that. We are moving back towards separation, back towards individuation, back towards fostering and feeding this sense of small me and away from interconnectedness. And judgment is like a warning light on our dashboard. Judging, judging, judging. Because judging is itself an act of separation. It's an act of division. It's an act of clearly demarking the territory. So when I see that, I say, okay, now something's going on here. This isn't about judgment any longer. It's not about evaluating you or building myself up in relationship to you, or conversely, but also just as self-fulfilling, is to bolster you up in relationship to the me so that I can feel the inadequacy, because I'd rather feel inadequate than nothing at all. So I'll feel inadequate. Inadequacy then, okay? I'm inadequate. Well, at least that's a definition, a self-definition. It's something I can rub against. I'm not as good as anyone else. So now I'm defined. I have a sense of definition about me. It hurts. The definition hurts. But it doesn't matter. The definition, having a definition is better than the hurt. Okay, so a judgment is working one way or the other for us, either towards our benefit or towards our benefits and bolstering ourselves up, or towards our benefit and putting ourselves down. Either way, it's ego satisfying. So we have to understand that. I know myself either way. I have something to rub up against. I'm defined either way. Okay, so now I'm feeling the pain. But you know, after a while you get tired of that pain. When we pay attention to it, rather than act from it, which is judgment. When we actually are willing to pay attention to it, when we actually are willing to hold it. I read this, Abe Lincoln said this. He said, I have been driven many times to my knees by the overwhelming conviction that I have nowhere else to go. See, that's it then. We have nowhere else to go. We have nowhere else to go here. I can do psychological workshops. I can go through years of psychoanalysis. I have nowhere else to go. When I have nowhere else to go, then the pain of inadequacy can be intimated. That's the last place, that's my last resting stop. I've said this so many times and in so many different ways. We have to literally be forced by a lack of other possible passageways into our pain. And yet the pain is the central core issue in the Buddhist teaching. Okay, so here it is now. This is it. The inadequacy. And then the spirit of wise view begins to percolate, not in spite of the pain, not in aversion to the pain, not in contrast to the pain, but in the pain. It begins in the pain. That's where connection begins. It begins in connecting with the pain. Now we have to understand that judgment has many layers to this. If we could just see things the way they were, which is the first level of surrender, then we wouldn't judge. We'd just see things the way they were and move through the world. And that's where ultimately the Dharma rests, in seeing things the way. But we have built up protection after protection from seeing things the way they were, and we're just getting some of the heat from the fire of all of that reactivity. So we follow the heat back down through the flames. The first level of flame that we come to when we start approaching it is the sense, okay, judging, that hurts. Okay, that's a very, we're still far away from the fire, but at least we're beginning to get a sense that this judgment itself hurts. So then we go into the pain of why we judge. The pain of why we judge, the emotion which is driving the judgment, is not an analysis away. It's not. It's right there. It's right in the middle of the judgment. It's experientially based right in the judgment. It's not something we have to extrapolate from. Oh, I see that this is happening to me and therefore I'm inadequate. It's, you can feel the inadequacy if you feel the judgment. It's like you can feel the heat of the fire and smell the smoke at exactly the same time. Those are not two different things. One and the same thing. So then the inadequacy. No, but we're still, believe me, we are still far away from the heart of this furnace. But wherever we catch the furnace, wherever we catch the fire, surrender is what is called. Because we back ourselves up through surrender, through the pain of each of the layers in which we have not been able to surrender, we just keep backing ourselves up. So the judgment, okay, let me just see what this judgment is. So the first, okay, let me just see this thing. God, you're no good on this. Then, because that's circular thought, what's usually driving circular thinking is an emotion. We go from the circular thought of just continually externalizing, forced externalization is circular thinking, where thoughts just come back around and around in the same pattern of mind like a carousel. You know there's something in the center of that carousel that's driving that. It's usually an emotion. We go to the emotion. Okay. Oh, I don't feel good about myself. Then we hold that. See, every time, whenever we hold it, it gives way, and then we go to the next level. See, the judgment gave way, and now we're at inadequacy. See? It's like a... And now we're in inadequacy. And then it gives way. What's it give way to? The fear of being nothing. The inadequacy was at least something. It was a safe net. You know, don't want to use too many metaphors here. I'll get us all confused. But we fell, and that net caught us, right? Inadequacy was the safety net that caught us from not being anything. So now I'm inadequate. Well, I can work with that one. Just need to do more workshops. So now we're off running. Now we're off running with inadequacy. You see? So we're being compelled through activity by our inadequacy. First it was our judgment. What's wrong with me? Why do I judge so much? Now we're at okay. Now I'm not going to do anything about the inadequacy. Nothing. Whoa, this is a hard one. Because to sit in the middle of inadequacy is torturous because there's a belief system there that is so strong, the fibers of which hold the whole net, and that those are that I am not worth a thing. Hold that for a minute. I mean, when you really feel that, feel it. Feel that for a second. You are not worth a thing. Somebody comes up to you and tells you that, or insinuates it, or your cat looks at you. Jeez, and there's a moment there where you feel like, oh, I'm not worth anything. Oh, the cat, what's a cat know? See, that's what we do. It's like the cat doesn't know anything. the person was wrong. Oh, he's a flake. He wrote that evaluation of mine. Yeah. But the hurt, see, the hurt is where the reactivity. When there's reactivity, that means there's hurt. So, okay, then I hold that. Okay, now I'm at the level of me of essentially having no worth. Now, what my real fear is there is what that no worth signifies, that I'm nothing. I have no worth, but there's still a me who is worthless. But what about the net below that in which I'm nothing? See? Now, that, you see the terror, and that's not too strong of a word where we're talking about the subtlety of this particular, the terror of each net becomes exponential. See, I can do with judgment. All right, well, I'm judging. Let me talk about judgment in the interview. Inadequacy, well, I need to see my my therapist. Then there's no territory. Now we're in unknown territory here. Can't read about this in textbooks anymore. Now we're moving into unknown ground. And I can see, I get an intimation as I moved into that unknown of something that is vast. Something that is vast in its stillness. Something that is vast. And it has been to protect me from that vastness that I have put all these layers upon layer upon layer upon layer. So I've now, each net has given away to the next, and now I'm in free fall. So how do we hold free fall? In terror? That doesn't sound too exciting. How do I hold free fall? Like this. In presence. In stillness. There's no net. No net needed. The moment I reference out of that free fall, the moment I reference out of it, the moment I place a reference point, then I place, there's two. The moment I have said, oh, I know you, the moment I say, I know me, the moment I reference anything with a sense of I have two tethers, and I have judgment, and I have inadequacy. We'll just build it back up slowly. I have a reference point, and then I have a person who's hurting, and a person who's feeling either superior or inferior, depending upon that particular psyche, temperament. Then I have pain associated with that self-enhancement or diminishment. And then I have the plays of judgment upon the field of that. And wow, it came from nothing. It's like this breeze. Came from just no nothing. And here, connectedness of heart says everything. To judge from the space of stillness makes no sense whatsoever. And judgment is so insidious. And how, and what it, I mean, we can be sitting for years, and believe me, I have seen many, many sitters, yogis, sit for years and years. And the judgment plays upon their own relationship to the meditation, and it's just, they never move beyond the judging phase of the thing to get to the hurt. And so they're sitting there and they're saying, well, I can sit longer than he can. He's walking slower than I am. Oh, well. He's a better sitter than I. He seems so equanimous. That's the one in Vipassana insight. He's so balanced. Inside he's like it's a pass-fail system. I either pass in relationship to you or I fail. Pass-fail. So I move into the subtlety of that. I begin to base my practice in relaxation. So that relaxation, see, when I look over you and I see that you're moving slower than I am, my compulsive nature, my judging nature, my sense of inadequacy says, oh, I'm just not doing it well enough. And I'm right back into the culturization of the market economy. Just carrying it with me on retreat. I've got it now. I need a better zafu. That'd do it. Okay, so that's all unwise view. That's all quantification. That's all just, is there another way? Yes, there's another way. But are we willing to go there? Well, I like to stay, you know, in the purchase of things rather than feeling the pain. Just let me spend a little while longer in terms of my evaluation and comparison. That's a little easier. Yeah, it's a lot easier. Until the pain reaches a certain threshold, we're not going to ever move into it. How many of us have reached that point in which the threshold is met? Which this isn't going to work anymore for us. It's no longer beneficial. How many more retreats are we going to sit there trying to negotiate our stature through our judgment? I'm not as smart as, I'm not as good as. So judgment occurs, and I don't move with the external evaluation process. No, I go straight down to the emotion that is driving it. Now that feels like a black hole that'll suck me into a whole history about this particular emotion and the explanations from which this emotion has come and all of the implications on my life if I go into this thing. And that's the fear screen that protects me from ever going into it at all. But because I'm smart enough now not to get lost in all that abstraction, not to let my mind turn through its wheels of indulgence in this emotion, not to let it just move endlessly through the wreckage of my past, I just let it go there and feel the pain. I can feel that. I don't have to reconfirm the reasons why I feel that. I don't have to keep re-solidifying the sense of self, which is just upping the net, jumping from this net up to the just let that net fall in on itself. Just let the weight of my relaxation explode the net outward and fall through that. It doesn't take effort. It takes relaxation. It takes the willingness to surrender to it. Okay, so now so here we are now. Now, if you're in this place of stillness, where's the judgment? Look around. No judgment. Distinctions. One thing, all things. One thing, all things. Move among and intermingle without distinction. To live in this realization is to be without anxiety about non-perfection. To live in this faith is the road to non-duality, because the non-dual is one with the trusting mind. Okay. Can we sit for a minute or two?